On the phone with me this morning is Kevin Cease of Cease Funeral Home. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Brett. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. We were just talking before we went on the air about the curfew in Bagley. They put in a 10 o'clock curfew a few weeks ago, and you are a Bagley-born child, right?
Born and raised, absolutely. Born in the hospital in Bagley and raised there, and we had a curfew growing up because I remember they blew the siren. It was a little before 10, but you had to be home by 10. And my mother made sure that we got home then because that was we were always on our bikes doing something. So I do remember that. And this brings back those kind of memories.
It does. And I was I remember that, too. We had in Thief River Falls, we had that whistle go off at 10 o'clock. And I think if I remember right, it was everybody under 17 had to be in. And what was really going to happen if we didn't do it? I didn't break the curfew. I mean, I didn't get caught breaking the curfew.
I didn't break the curfew either because I just did what my mom told me to
You're
do.
You're such a nice kid.
I'm sure my very ugly brothers broke it.
Yes.
I'm sure they did.
Yes.
Yeah,
I'm sure they
got in trouble somehow.
Yes, and maybe a sister.
Yeah. Oh, no, my beautiful sister would never have done anything wrong at all. Never. No, just my ugly brothers.
So how has life changed for you, Kevin? It seems like it might be a little bit different during this pandemic.
It is. It is. Funeral service is, you know, the basic tenets of what we do have not changed. You know, when somebody calls us, we take care of take care of the person who has passed away, and we take care of the families. That's always our priority, and we still do that, and that's an important part of what we have. But just not being able to grieve in a public way has just absolutely been so very, very difficult for the families that we serve. And because like when you're grieving, it's not, you can say, oh, well, we'll have some kind of gathering or some kind of celebration or some kind of service later, but you're still grieving. It's not like you can put up, you know, push the pause button and then all of a sudden your grief goes away for a while. You're still grieving. And the way that we have always dealt with as a society, as culture, as a human population, we've always dealt with death and loss by coming together and usually bringing some food because food is love and sitting there and talking to each other and living with each other and hugging each other and crying. And I always say that we're always, you know, snot is a very important part of what we do because, you know, that's how we grieve, you know, and we're not allowed to have that in this kind of social distancing kind of little small era that we're going to be going through here. And it just, it breaks our hearts and it's hard for the family. So we do what we can within the guidelines. The guidelines are that we have to have gatherings of 10 or less. It's in the governor's order that we can, that's completely legal. And what we've been doing is taping it and putting it up on our YouTube channel. And in some ways, there's been more people been able to access and watch that because they can do it whenever they want to. They don't have to do it exactly at 11 o'clock on Thursday. You know, they can watch it whenever they want to and still be part of that process. But it's not the same. It really isn't. It's hard.
How has that affected the graveside? Because that's pretty important for some people.
It is. It is. Well, you know, again, the thing is that usually when a graveside happens, that is kind of a family event anyway. Again, we're, you know, kind of, we limit it to there too, but the family gathers, and of course the family is a family, and so they kind of all gather together and they hug and cry and hold each other, but it's certainly not a public event like we've had. So it's just hard. But if I can share with you a little bit, I want to say thank you to every single person who is listening right now. And I know it seems hard and it's difficult and people have gone through some incredible turmoil and anguish. And this is hard. This is really hard. But because Minnesotans are so very good at what we've done, we're among the lowest infection rate in the country. And when I was looking at some modeling, and some modeling, I understand, but these people are scientists and they're smarter than me. If we had done nothing, let's just say we went about our lives, didn't change anything, didn't wear masks, didn't social distance, didn't stay at our homes. Normal kind of deaths that we experience in 1 year in Minnesota is about 40,000. Some years it's 38, sometimes it's 42, but it's on average about 40,000 people will pass away. And that's cancer and heart and accidents. I mean, that's everything. So what they're looking at, some of the models I saw that if we had done nothing and this is in a 12-month period, about 50,000 people would have died because of the virus, because of COVID. And so that's more, you know, than people normally die. And you're doubling, more than doubling the death rate there just in one period. Now, since we have sacrificed and we have given up and we have come together as a community to recognize that we need to protect the vulnerable people, the death rate looks like it's going to be possibly, again, it's who knows, it's a model, but it looks like it'll be about 20,000 once they start opening up in about a 12-month period. If we don't get a vaccine, if we don't get, you know, some very, very new treatments, those are obviously game changers. So, in other words, by doing what we were told to do and listening, we saved about 30,000 lives so far. And of course, we're not going to notice that or see that because those people are going to live. They're going to stay with us. And it's going to be great. You know, we're going to have that. We won't have to grieve those people. So I just wanted to remind everybody that's why we're doing it. And that's why, you know, that's why we're committed to following our rules by the state health department. And I also let you know, too, that we didn't have, you know, we're prepared for a little bit, you know, of exposure to some things. But, you know, when this first started, I think I had 20 masks and, you know, had some gloves and some personal protective equipment, but, you know, nothing like the scale that we need to have. And those poor funeral directors in New York, they got blindsided. They had no time to prepare. They had no idea what was coming. And we've had time now to change the way we do things. We've had time now to adjust to new protocols and make sure that the families we serve are protected, but also our own families are protected, that we're protected. And this bought us time to do that. And we wouldn't have been able to handle it. It would have been New York here, and a little lesser extent because we're more rural. But, you know, I just want to say thank you to everybody. Because it seems like you're not doing anything and you're giving up a lot. You're sacrificing, but you're sacrificing for, you're saving lives. You really, literally have saved lives by doing this. And you've prepared everybody for this. So that's my spiel.
That's good.
Like my long, long-winded spiel there.
Well, you know, a funeral director who's focusing on life, that's excellent. And I really appreciate that. I'm going to hold that number in front of me and with other people that we're saving 30,000 people. That's an amazing number.
It is an amazing number. And again, we'll see those people. So it's not like we have to grieve that loss. And so that's the hard part, is that we don't see what we saved, but yet we do every day. We'll get to live with them. We get to experience them.
So. Right. Well, that's great. What for you personally, I just want to ask, have you felt more nervous about being around people? Have you felt scared about the coronavirus at all? I mean, not at all, but I mean, how has it affected you?
I'm personally not worried too much. I know that this is a very devastating, awful disease. And personally, if I get it, I'm not scared of getting it myself. I know it's going to hurt and it's going to be awful. From what I understand, I had a cousin went through this, and it's very, very painful. This is not just the flu. For some people, it is, but oh my word, it is misery. And so I don't want to do that, but I'm not scared of that part of it. But for instance, my father is very vulnerable. He's on kidney dialysis. He's 86. We can't expose him to that. We just can't.
Right.
And so for us, that's our whole goal, is to keep him safe and healthy until there's some kind of treatment, some kind of vaccine that's available that will protect him. And so I hold him as a very dear and near example of why we're doing this. And so I'm scared for the people in my life that are vulnerable, but I just also know that serving people, you know, us funeral directors, we're, some people call us last responders, because you know we're their last, but we're still kind of on a first response team. And I have a feeling we'll, you know, once it's opened up, once this is going to be going, the surge hits this summer, we'll be taking care of it as much as we can to protect ourselves and our families. But I have a feeling we'll probably be exposed at some point, and maybe even do that. And I'm not worried about that part of it. I just want to make sure that we've got enough staff that can be still sticking around that can take care of what's going to be happening. So,
well,
the scary part for everybody is just that we don't know.
Right.
You know, nobody knows. And that's the scary part, because we've been good law abiding citizens.
Right.
So.
Yep. The uncertainty is the biggest deal right now. So
yeah,
I hope that you don't get it. That's my hope for you. And I've worked with you before, and I've worked with funeral directors for a long time, and you do amazing work. And I appreciate all that you do, because families need it at that time. So you're putting yourself out there on the line, and I really appreciate that. And I appreciate you calling this morning and letting me call you. Thanks so much.
Yeah, as always, you're a very intelligent interviewer, and it's a fun conversation.
All right, have a great day, Kevin.
I will. You too, Brett.
All right, bye-bye.
Take care.